Episode 134 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudelli sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudelli.
Hey everyone, before we get started today, I want to thank our sponsors, CME Group, Top Step Trader, and Trading Technologies. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. Create your account and try it now, free, at tryttnow.com. Now, this past week, I attended the Futures Industry Association IDX event in London. I was fortunate enough to sit down and chat with several industry leaders about the European landscape of financial markets. I've always said that we're not just traders, we're entrepreneurs. I stress how important it is to not only study the charts, the technicals, and the fundamentals, but to understand what shapes the future of this industry. Whether it's regulation or compliance, it's something that heavily affects our trading businesses, whether you like it or not. That's why I firmly believe attending these FIA events and reporting back to you is so important. So what was a major theme this year at IDX? It was the political uncertainty being an overhang on financial markets. We've all seen the lack of volatility lately. So not only for traders, the banks and the businesses associated with the futures markets are feeling this too. I asked our industry leaders how they see the Brexit and the upcoming political events affecting our markets. We discussed topics ranging from new regulations, euro clearing, the expansion of FX trading across Asia, and even getting reliable connectivity in emerging markets. I had a wonderful time in London. It's truly an awesome city that I look forward to coming back to soon. As usual, thank you all for listening, and please enjoy this episode. My first guest today was Simon Poulston Jones, head of Europe at FIA. Today, Simon and I talked about euro clearing, Brexit, and how the exchanges say that the top concern of their clients right now is the uncertainty in politics. Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Welcome to IDX.
So this is what you guys call English summer.
For those of you that obviously can't see, it is, of course, London, so it is, of course, raining outside.
And not to mention windy, and that's not good for my blow dry, Simon.
At least you have hair.
Yeah, right. I got out of the hotel this morning getting ready to catch a cab, and I almost got blown over and totally drenched in under a minute. It was pretty impressive. Such a change from what we've had. I mean, I'm like, this is what people are saying is English summer. I thought it was beautiful the past couple of days.
You should have been here on Saturday. 30 degrees and sunny.
Yes. So, well, it's great to be with you here today at IDX. Now, we're going to talk a lot about euro clearing, and we're going to talk about Brexit. But before we get into that, give us a little bit of a background on yourself, Simon.
So I'm a lawyer by training. I started out life at the end of the 90s in private practice in a law firm. Although I now look after clear derivatives in Europe, I'm by background an OTC derivatives lawyer. So I spent the early part of my career working on structured rates, structured credit, cash CDOs. And of course, they ended up with rather a bad name through the financial crisis. And shortly before the crisis arrived in 2007, I was invited to add to the portfolio of products that I was covering by then over at Barclays Investment Bank, and to take on the European legal coverage for Barclays futures business. So that was my first introduction to clearing and clear derivatives. And then over time, crisis evolved. People thought, well, how do we best respond to the events of the crisis? They looked at clearing, and that then led to the G20 commitments in 2009 and the avalanche of regulation that we've seen both here in Europe and in the US and elsewhere over the course of this decade. So I moved from being a structured OTC derivatives guy into a clearing lawyer, and then increasingly into the regulatory space as a regulatory lawyer. And those three things things meant I was engaging with trade associations an awful lot, not only FIA, but some of the other major local and global trade associations based here in London. And I was approached by what was at the time the Futures and Options Association, who were looking to bring their business on further to become its new chief executive, which I did in March 2014. And at that time, shortly before then, in fact, FOA, as it then was, had announced an affiliation with FIA, which at that point in time was based in Washington, D.C., had an office in Singapore, and a presence in Chicago for its principal trading community. And we then went through the process of moving that affiliation on to a merger at the beginning of last year. So from that point, I was no longer CEO of a European trade association looking after the futures industry, but I'm now head of Europe for a global trade association.
So you have a vast understanding of clearing, regulation, and this is a very big topic down here right now at IDX is Euro clearing. And, you know, we have traders all over the world that probably don't understand the impacts of this, right? I mean, we have a lot of high-level people that listen to this that understand some of the impacts and it's being talked about here. But talk to our whole audience about this, you know, political uncertainty and how it's affecting Euro clearing. Why should we as traders be watching this? And how it will impact us. And also talk to us about what you're seeing as the major concerns right now.
Yeah. So what is Brexit? At its simplest level, it's simply the UK pulling out of a block of 28 European countries. It's going to end up being separated not only by the English Channel, but by potentially by a different set of regulation over time. And that is a particular concern for the Europeans. What they're really focused on in Europe at the moment is growing the European capital markets and delivering jobs and growth. And they therefore want to give careful consideration to how products that are important for financial stability, like futures, and are important for monetary policy reasons because they're denominated in euros, how can the Europeans continue to supervise and oversee that market? Now, the futures industry is a global industry. Euro is a global reserve currency. And as we were hearing in one of our panels here at the conference earlier today, you've got challenges when you're looking at a political world that is becoming more national, more regional. And how does that interconnect with global financial markets? So when we think about futures and euro-denominated derivatives, so swaps as well, I'd include within that, we need to go back to the basics about what are our markets for? And our markets are all about managing risk and providing transparency. That's why the G20 said we want more central clearing of derivatives back in 2009, because the cleared derivatives markets came through the financial crisis much better than the OTC markets. So what are we concerned about? What are our members concerned about in the context of Brexit? Well, there are really two or three key things. One is this question about the treatment of euro-denominated derivatives going forwards. Will it be possible for marketplaces around the globe to facilitate the trading of euro-denominated products? And will clearinghouses around the globe be able to continue to clear euro-denominated derivatives? At the moment, the majority of that clearing is happening in London for euro-denominated derivatives, for interest rate swaps. The numbers are in the high 90s. We see that for dollars as well. And that's not to say that the entire business is in London. There's meaningful business in continental Europe already at Eurex. And there is some derivatives business in euros that is cleared in Chicago. So there's 3 trillion or so of notional of euro-denominated interest rate swaps in Chicago. So the challenge for Europe is how does it make sure that it has oversight of these markets, whilst also maintaining financial stability in its monetary policy goals, without causing undue disruption. And the European Commission has announced its proposals as part of the EMIR review in the last few weeks, that it's looking at this question about the treatment of third country clearinghouses, which would include the US or would include the UK. And they're looking at three options. Option one is the status quo, just leave things as they are, which means that your regulation in that third country, be it the UK or the US, it has to be equivalent to European regulation. And if it is, then the clearinghouse itself has to be given recognition if Europeans are to be able to access that market and meet their regulatory obligations. The second option is looking at enhanced oversight of the activity going through that clearinghouse. And the third option is something we refer to as forced relocation, which essentially means you wouldn't be permitted to clear euro-denominated derivatives in a third country clearinghouse, potentially, anymore. And the challenge there is, what does forced relocation actually mean, and how might that harm our markets, to address your specific question? Well, you're looking at fragmentation. Potentially, you end up with an onshore pool of users who have a much smaller market, much less liquidity than an offshore pool of people who aren't from the EU27, who have deeper, more liquid access to euro-denominated derivatives than their onshore counterparts. What's that doing? That's leading to a fragmentation of markets. Also, because you're taking, in the case of interest rate swaps, potentially euro-denominated interest rate swaps away from all the other interest rate swaps in other currencies that are currently cleared in London. So you lose the cross-currency portfolio margining benefits, which again will make things more expensive. So what do we risk seeing? We risk seeing fragmentation of our markets. We risk seeing an increase in costs. We risk seeing less liquidity because of that fragmentation. And all of these things are negative. These are not things that one would set out to achieve for a financial market, particularly a market like ours that is designed first and foremost to help people manage their risk, whether that be their price risk, the interest rate risk, FX risk, inflation, and a variety of others. So we need to make sure that as we get caught up in what is a very political discussion about the treatment of euro clearing and euro clearing location questions, that we don't lose sight of the economics and what our markets are for and who gets harmed the most in the event of any fragmentation of our markets. And the danger is that it is the EU27 end users themselves who suffer the most from any forced relocation. So to that end, we have this morning written a letter to the European Commission commenting on the three options that I mentioned earlier and saying that our members are really not in favour of forced relocation because of the harm that that will do to the markets and to participants in our markets. And therefore, the strong preference, and we believe the optimal outcome for regulators and the regulated alike, is for enhanced oversight of those third country clearinghouses who are clearing euro-denominated derivatives.
So you gave us three scenarios, and one of them you stress would be the one that you're the least in favor of. You wrote a letter about this. Who determines which one of those three scenarios is going to be the one that is used?
So it's a simple question with a fairly complex answer. The usual way that European law would come about is the European Commission would make a proposal. That they've done tentatively with these three proposals. They are due in the coming days, it might be as soon as next week, to put a bit more flesh on the bones as to what the proposals are, where we would expect to see which clearinghouses in which countries are potentially in scope for which products. So that's all to say, the European Commission is the starting point. They will propose their suggestions. that will then be considered by the 27 countries that will continue to comprise the European Union through a body called the European Council. And then there are a number of directly elected members of the European Parliament. There are currently 751 of those MEPs, about 70 or so of which are British. So we've still got about 680 or so left from the other 27 countries. And between the Commission, the Parliament and the Council, they then go through this process called a trilogue process, in which they agree and finalise the laws that apply. So that's the normal way of doing it. The challenge we've got is that the day after the referendum here in the UK, around about this time last year, the President of the European Commission and the President of France both said that looking at all aspects of Brexit, one thing that is important to them is that euro-denominated derivatives be forcibly relocated so they are cleared in the European Union. So the challenge we've got is trying to navigate through the process through which European regulation is normally created, and then working out where does that intersect with the bilateral negotiations between the UK government and the EU27 as part of this Brexit process.
Okay, we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to talk to you about Brexit. There's talk here of a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit. Talk to us about the implications of either one of those and maybe how that would lean towards one of those scenarios you previously discussed.
Sure. So let's start with a hard Brexit. Here we're talking about worst case scenario where potentially not only is it the case that agreement is reached on the terms of a deal, but actually there is no deal. People walk away from the table. So there's the Brexit process is subject to something called Article 50. What Article 50 does is it gives you a 2-year time frame to negotiate the terms of exit. The risk is no deal is reached. In that circumstance, you've got people being cut off from markets because the UK clearinghouses would not have the regulatory recognition that they need that would enable Europeans to continue to meet their regulatory obligations by clearing derivatives, not just euro-denominated derivatives, but any derivatives subject to mandatory clearing on UK market infrastructure. So Europeans won't be able to use that infrastructure going forwards. There'll be open questions about what's the treatment of the derivatives they're already clearing in London clearinghouses, because as a result of losing that regulatory treatment, the regulatory capital rules that apply for derivatives in the London-based clearinghouses also mean the capital that people have to hold against those positions could go up by 25 to 50 times. And if they can't trade out of the positions, they've potentially got capital and positions that are trapped at London clearinghouses. You've also got banks who are providing clearing services looking at worst case scenarios like this. So they're thinking, how can we make sure we can continue to service our clients without disruption? And that is why you're hearing about the banks looking at relocating some of their staff to continental Europe. That might be Dublin, it might be Amsterdam, Paris, or Frankfurt, or elsewhere. And they just need to make sure that in the event of a hard Brexit, where they're not able to service their continental European clients from their office in London anymore, that they can continue to service them from continental European offices, that they have all the regulatory permissions in place. So what are the consequences? Well, the risks are that people get cut off from their clients, people get cut off from their service providers, cut off from their clearing houses. We have an enormous amount of disruption. When it comes to soft Brexit, it remains to be seen what the consequences are. What we're calling for within FIA, when we meet with regulators in the UK and in Europe, and when we meet with politicians and legislators, is there are three key outcomes you really need to try to achieve. The first one is to minimize disruption. That means you need to have transitional arrangements in place. I talked a moment ago about the 2-year period of Article 50. It needs to be longer. We've suggested another 3 years to help of ensure that people can transition their business models into this new regulatory paradigm. The second thing, after you minimize disruption, you need to avoid fragmentation. And that means let the market decide where to clear, in particular for euro-denominated derivatives, but in all classes of derivatives. And then finally, you need to maintain global access. Make sure people aren't cut off from clearing houses, from trade repositories, from trading venues, or indeed from their clients or service providers.
Excellent stuff today, Simon. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me here at Futures Radio Show. Enjoy the rest of your time at IDX.
Thank you for having me.
Next, I spoke with Steve Stewart, Managing Director of Sales at TT Europe. Steve and I talked about rugby and how being an athlete can be beneficial to working in the financial markets. We talked about the political landscape in Europe and its impact on traders. We discussed the financial regulation called MiFID II and also about new happenings at TT. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
That's great to speak with you today, Steve. We had a great conversation the other night. We were at the opening ceremony. I found out you played rugby. You know, and I really didn't know too much about the sport. I caught a little bit of it on TV here. I've obviously watched it in the past. And right out of the gates, I know I'm not going to be messing with Steve when we get in this interview. I'm going to be straightforward, you know, get right to the questions, because those guys are some of the toughest people I've ever seen. How about it, Steve?
Yeah, it's an exciting time for rugby here. We've got the British Lions over in down to New Zealand. That's a combination of England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland, and so it's exciting. In fact, there's a game on right as we speak here because of the time difference, so it's really exciting. But I think you asked me about my background, and I came from I'm South African. I came over to England when I was 21 to play rugby for a season and never left, really. Played rugby kind of ever since. A few injuries on the way, which is probably why I never really made it, but that probably saved me as well, because ultimately wasn't quite good enough. It's a tough environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you find that by being in athletics, that helped you with now being in the financial industry?
I think it does. I think you learn teamwork. I think you learn competitiveness, and those are probably the two most crucial things pretty much on my day-to-day basis and how I am.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about that. Now, we're here at IDX. A lot of things being talked about. One of the most important things that we're hearing a lot about is what's going to impact, you know, traders across the globe, not just European traders. But my question to you, Steve, is what is the state of European business right now? I mean, there's a lot going on politically, you know, geopolitical events that are constantly happening. We know that there could be some situations with a hard or soft Brexit. What are the things that you're seeing right now that traders need to keep note of?
So we were going to do this yesterday, and I was walking up yesterday, and as you remember, those of you who were in London yesterday, we had a crazy storm going on, high winds and a torrential rain, and I'm walking up and I'm thinking about all the things that are going on from a geopolitical point of view, and that added to it, just kind of added to the craziness of the world we're in at the moment, you know, with all the elections that are going on for tomorrow, the British elections. Then you have the Trump, the Brexit. Very sadly, you have the terrorist attacks in Manchester and in London as well. So it's kind of a crazy time at the moment. I think it's creating a lot of volatility and unease at the moment, and I think that it'll help the market, but it's certainly making people very nervous.
Yeah, I had a couple of conversations with people down here about a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit. And people were saying that the hard Brexit could be really kind of hard on, you know, traders and banks, you know, trying to figure out what to do, because it would be an immediate impact on the markets. And the soft Brexit, I've heard, is what more people are preferring.
Yep.
I'm not really familiar with how each would kind of, you know, set up what would happen. But talk to us a little bit about a hard Brexit and a soft Brexit and what it would mean to traders across the globe.
Well, I'd say if we have a hung parliament, I think we're going to have a soft Brexit. And I think if we have a majority, then we'll have a hard Brexit. I think ultimately it's the hard Brexit is probably the way I imagine it's going to happen, although who can call any of the recent political results that we've seen recently. I would expect to see a hard Brexit.
So you'd expect to see a hard Brexit, and what do you think immediate implications would be?
Well, I think all the banks are going to be looking at their options. I'm not sure that money would be moving out into Europe, although there's a lot of talk about it. I think some of the panels yesterday were talking about the fact that in order for a bank to relocate and to be in Europe, they need to be able to have the infrastructure there, whether that's the buildings and then the staff around them. So they need, you know, accountants and lawyers to be locally. They can't relocate the whole the whole business. And I think that that's going to make some big decisions. That's going to make it hard to do that, especially if multiple banks are moving into one location.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, there's another thing going on around here called MiFID.
Yes.
Two.
Yes.
You know, it's just one of those names that, you know, it's catching on down here. A lot of people discussing it and talking about it. I am not overly familiar with this. My question to you is, what is it? Explain to our audience, what is it? And why should traders even want to know what this is?
Well, it's going to affect everyone. And it's a regulation that's come in. It's MiFID II. It's a second iteration of MiFID. And it's coming, it has been delayed. It's going to be going live on the 3rd of January 2018. But it's really going to affect everyone. And the race to be ready for that is probably the biggest challenge that everyone has. Everyone needs to be compliant. TT, frankly, is doing a far better job this time around than we did last time. Last time we were very reactive. And this time we're very proactive. We've got a team in place that are proactively meeting with clients, engaging with clients individually, working out what they want to see from it. And we have our own view of, we've gone through it in a lot of detail. We have our own view about how that should look and how the software should perform for that, and we've put that in place and then communicated that to clients as well as the FIA board panels, and that's been well received. Pretty much all of the banks that we're engaging with are very happy with where we are.
So, but talk to us about what it actually is. I know you said it was important to us, but what is the importance to us?
It's just regulation of the markets, EU regulation of the markets, and how we should engage. It's come around, it's been around for the last 8 or 9 years in different iterations, and you know, clearly the market changes that we've had recently have made for new rules coming in. Algos have now come into place, for example, and there's new rulings around that. So it's just the new iterations, but it's pretty hard to impose. I think it's ultimately done by some people that don't really understand the markets that we're in as well, and that makes it complicated for us.
Yeah, so it's just more regulation that people are uncertain about, and it can really, you know, get people really uncertain once again about how to conduct business.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's you have an easing of regulation potentially in the US and you have a hardening of regulation in Europe. So I think that kind of says a lot for the environment that we're in, actually. It's uneasing.
Well, yeah, I mean, just look, it's the same thing you could say about rates. I mean, well, we don't know if we could say that for much longer, but we had a scenario where, you know, rates are going up in the US and you still had QE over here in Europe. Mm. And now I think the bond market's maybe telling us something different, but we can get into a different day, Steve. Talk to us a little bit about what's happening with TT. We have a lot of listeners out there that are using TT. You guys are tops in execution across the industry. So my question to you is, what's new and exciting happening at TT that we should all be on the lookout for?
Well, we're kind of going through our growing up phase, if you like. You know, we're 20-odd years old, but we have a new platform which has been out for over a couple of years. And it's challenging its big brother, the Xtrader, which everyone knows and loves, and it's got a very good user base. And it's slowly gaining more and more traction. And you can see that through the amount of FCMs that we've signed to go onto it, but also a lot of users are coming across. Performance is better, and it has more functionality. It's more exchange connectivity that we won't have on Xtrader. One of the big things that we're looking to do this year is to add 10 new exchanges to TT. Historically, we've only added 2 or 3 in a year, and we're looking to add 10 in the next calendar year. So that's pretty exciting.
What's interesting to me is that there's that many exchanges. Can you name some of the exchanges that are being added?
They're not all based in Europe and the US. Some of them are based out in Europe and some are based out in my hometown, South Africa. So
yeah, more and more we're getting global markets, and TT is going to be giving us access to those global markets.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and you know, that's primarily come out of requirements from banks. We have a fix as a service is a big part of us, of the new TT platform, and the scalability and the accessibility is pretty important there, and banks wanting to engage with us from a fixed point of view is why those new exchanges are going to be added.
Awesome, Steve. Enjoy the rest of your time here at IDX, and thank you very much for speaking with me here on Futures Radio.
Thank you. It was great to meet you.
Next, I spoke with Fraser Bell, Chief Revenue Officer at BSO Networks. We chatted about my passion for wanting to visit Scotland. And of course, we then went on to talk about the market-related topics regarding expanding FX trading across Asia as demand for currency derivatives is increasing in emerging markets. Then we talked about their recent partnership with CME Group to provide connectivity in emerging markets, which is huge if you're a trader and someday wants to trade from a remote island. Fraser, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
It's great to speak with you. You know, we had a fun conversation before we began today about your name, Frazier. I am infatuated with the show Outlander. It's on Stars. I love the idea of going to Scotland. I've been thinking about it for some time, and you and I had a fun conversation about that. So I'm very interested in your backstory before we begin today. So tell us how you got your start in the industry and eventually started working with BSO.
It's great to be here. I've been in the industry for 15 years. I've been at BSO for 9 years. Prior to that, I was a global telecoms business selling managed services around the world. But as you can tell with my accent, as a Scot, we like to do two things in this world. Number one is play golf, and the other is drink whiskey. So it's always great to come here to the IDX, because a lot of people love to play golf here, and a lot of people love to drink whiskey as well. So whilst I'm excited to be here to talk about BSO, it's always good to be here to network the opportunities.
Yeah, two things I'm kind of a fan of myself too there. And a lot of beer drinking being done here in London. It's my first time here, and I'm really enjoying it. Great people, great town, a lot of fun. Now let's talk about some of these topics here at IDX. You guys this morning had an announcement about expanded FX trading circuit across Asia as demand to trade currency derivatives in emerging markets has increased. That's good to hear that demand has increased. Talk to us about this.
So BSO is a global provider of network and hosting services around the world, really specializing in the emerging markets. And for us, trying to find an opportunity and trying to increase the margin for our customers, what we really like to do is try to take our experience and knowledge into the emerging markets and build low latency network services which can make a difference. And what we've seen over the last 2 to 3 years, and it is becoming sharper as we gain more market share, is the need for companies to go into the emerging markets, so Asia in particular. And today we released some great news and exciting news for anyone trading London, Tokyo FX. We're going to lower that latency by 10 milliseconds. So for us, we've seen significant demand into Tokyo, both from Chicago and from London. And today's news is just another step in the direction of improving the latency for the traders.
Yeah, no, that's extremely important. And in this market, your role is huge for us. I mean, as traders, there's nothing we hate more than latency. Nobody wants to be the last one, you know, getting a price. And you guys really specialize in this. And I want to talk a little bit about Asia. Let's face it, out there in Asia, they don't have the best connectivity. And you guys are known for going into places that maybe we don't travel to, but there's still traders around the world. It's a global market. And you guys are really good at establishing reliable connectivity where trading infrastructure is, let's just call it what it is, it's less developed out there. Talk to us about how you guys are doing that.
Well, for us, we look at the market as a telecommunications provider to add value to the financial services marketplace. And to do that, we set out a strategy which was we were going to provide the highest possible service and the lowest possible latency to the electronic trading part of the financial services marketplace into the emerging markets. That was the business strategy. And the execution of that strategy really was around making sure that whilst, yes, it is a developing market, there is very good infrastructure in Asia, but the geography of Asia makes it difficult. There's a lot more islands, there's a lot more sea in relation to how the countries are all connected. And therefore, there's a relationship between the geography and the technology and how it gets delivered. So how we provide our services is really through building relationships locally, understanding a lot of the fiber routes, understanding the buildings, the diversity, what is possible, what is not possible, and being able to offer the financial services marketplace a new opportunity to be able to trade in a very high availability, consistent way, similar to what they would do trading Europe or trading in America. And as the margins get tighter in Europe and America, people have to find new opportunities. And BSO is a platform business to allow that to happen. And we believe our job is to make sure that we can deliver it in the lowest possible latency and the highest possible service. And that means for us investing in people and technology and experience. So we got to make sure that we have the best people in the market to be able to support our customers.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. And it's funny, traders always talking about eventually trading on an island someday. You're going to be the one who provides that infrastructure for us to be able to do that. So obviously, a lot of guys out there, girls are going, oh, well, it's great to hear that someone's providing that for us. Now, final thing. You recently announced a partnership with CME. What is that partnership, and how is that going to affect traders?
Well, CME is the biggest market, biggest exchange in the world. So from our perspective, having access into CME and having a relationship with CME is strategically invaluable. So allowing our customers around the world access into Chicago, allowing access to the market data, allowing access to that platform. So example, it would be a lot of, we have low latency services from Mumbai, from Dubai and Moscow connecting back into CME at the lowest possible latency around the world. So for us, developing the partnership in Chicago allows us to take CME around the world and offer our clients, which could be traders in India, Dubai, Moscow, London, Shanghai, across the world, access to CME. So, you know, BSO is very excited about this opportunity with CME, but is more excited about making sure our customers see the relationship with CME and BSO adds value to their trading strategies, and they see us as a partner who can make sure that they are first of the trade, not last.
Fantastic. Fraser, thank you so much for spending time with me today here on Futures Radio Show, and hopefully someday we can hit the links. You can show me how to play real golf, as you guys call it up there in Scotland, and I think we would probably have a whiskey afterwards.
Oh, we definitely have a whiskey, and you're always invited up to St. Andrews, and I can take you around the old course.
Well, that's an invite I'm going to have to definitely take you up on, my friend. Thank you so much again.
Thanks so much for your time.
Last but not least, I spoke with Paul Houston, Global Head of FX Products at CME Group. Paul and I had a great conversation about the crazy weather here in London, and we talked about the evolution of FX products, as this is their 45-year anniversary at CME Group for launching FX products. We then discussed new product offerings in FX markets at CME and the process of CME choosing to launch a new product. Finally, I asked Paul about some of the topics that he has been focusing on here at IDX. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
I'm enjoying London. How about you? Are you enjoying it right now?
Yeah, apart from the weather yesterday, I think it was pretty horrible.
Was that unbelievable or what? Yeah. I mean, talk about a different one day from the next. And really, I guess this is my first time to London. You really have to be prepared for that. I didn't have an umbrella with me, Paul.
Yeah, well, if you live in London, you definitely get prepared for it. The grey and the rain, it's not always that bad, but yesterday was particularly bad, especially for June.
Yeah, exactly. And then you notice how I was noticing how those umbrellas were just kind of like blown straight up. I don't know, even from being in Chicago, I don't think I've seen wind like that.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting. So, Paul, it's great to speak with you here today at IDX. Give us a little bit of background on yourself before we get into topics.
Yeah, sure. So I joined the CME about a year ago, just over a year ago, to head FX globally, based in London. Before that, I'd worked in banking, so I started my career in 1995 working for Salomon Brothers on a trainee program. Involved in a number of areas. From there, I moved to RBS and JP Morgan, and then before I moved to CME, I was at Deutsche Bank. So covered a lot of financial products, primarily as you would expect in FX, but also had some exposure to interest rates and risk as well. So quite a long career in banking, and good now to move to the exchange and work at the CME.
Yeah, nice. So you've got a lot of experience in FX markets, and right now CME is coming up on a pretty big anniversary, 45 years since FX products have launched. Since you've seen so much, and you're now working for CME, talk to us about this evolution. There's a lot that has changed really over these 45 years. Talk to us about that evolution and where we sit right now in the FX space.
Yeah, sure. I mean, who would think it's been 45 years since FX Futures have launched it?
Crazy.
And what a great innovation it was, not only to establish a marketplace in its own right, but also as a precursor to financial futures and innovation in the wider financial products arena. The FX market's changed a lot. A lot of the trading is done electronically today. A lot of the post-trade systems and the end-to-end trade flow is electronic, which means a lot greater volume. The CME is by far the largest exchange for FX futures. I mean, we have up to 75% of the market, but there's a lot bigger, broader over-the-counter market in FX, which trades huge volumes. And we feel, in terms of future changes, we feel there's a lot of opportunity for some of that marketplace, not all, but some of that marketplace to move to FX futures. And that's largely due to a lot of cost pressures on the OTC marketplace. So post the financial crisis and post increased regulation, the costs of trading over the counter for some FX products, such as FX forwards, NDFs, and FX options have increased, which make futures more attractive. We also feel that FX, because it's over-the-counter, it's traded in 24-hour basis, it's traded across geographies, and it's very disparate in nature. So CME is one of is a primary marketplace, it's a central exchange which people can look at, they can observe price history. It's the only regulated marketplace in FX. So we feel there's a big opportunity there to attract participants into the market that want that regulation, want that transparency around the rule book. Particularly if you go look at some of the cost pressures, a lot of those cost pressures on OTC go away when you move into futures. So we know futures are very standardized and over-the-counter by definition is very tailored, and it may not fit all requirements, but one of the objectives we've been looking at is to look at how we adapt or enhance our product range to meet the needs of the new participants in the marketplace. We've recently had records of large open interest holders, so they're participants in the market who hold significant positions. And at the end of May, we saw a record there. And we've got a few more initiatives and innovations we're looking to capitalize on. So we launched monthly FX futures and Volcoin options, but also a few other product enhancements towards the end of the year.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear that we're getting more and more people involved in futures. Obviously, this is Futures Radio. I've been in futures my whole career. I started in 1995, too, on the trading floor. I actually started for LynnRall.com as a runner. Right. That's a whole other story, Paul. We can get to that in a different day. But talk to us about some of these new product offerings at CME. We've got FX Monthlies and Volatility Quoted Options. Dig into that a little bit for us.
Yeah, sure. So monthly futures, historically, 45 years ago, the CME launched quarterly futures on IMM dates. So they've largely been traded as a proxy to Spot FX. Although they're a quarterly future, and Spot FX is a T+2 instrument, a lot of the marketplace trades them as a proxy to Spot. There is a larger FX forward and NDF marketplace out there, and swap marketplace, are facing increased costs. So we thought it would be a good idea to introduce monthly IMM futures. So to allow a bit more granularity, a little bit more choice in the marketplace. And we saw two demands for that product, one from end users who wanted to hedge on a shorter dated basis, but also from spread traders, so from forward and swap traders who look to trade FX as a spread. So the objective of launching monthly futures is to encourage or introduce a new contract or a new way of trading for the marketplace. And although it's early days, we've seen 180 users trade the separate users trade the product. So we're optimistic about future growth prospects.
I always find it interesting how CME develops new products and puts them out there. I know that you guys are in constant communication with the clients. And how do you guys get to the point where you decide, okay, we're going to launch this new product? Like, what's the process? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's pretty intensive client validation. So there are a lot of different clients for trade futures, ranging from corporates, asset managers, hedge funds, banks, proprietary trading companies. It's a pretty extensive validation around that client base to determine if there's actually demand and determine what features of the product would suit that demand and that client base. So it's a fairly long process. Although monthly futures are an enhancement to the quarterly future, not a great deal of different product design. It did require a lot of validation across the market. So that was where we spent our time.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. Similar with the Ultra Bonds coming out, you already had an existing base there, so you're adding an additional product that clients are already asking for. So it's easy for them to kind of just move right into it. It's always fascinating stuff, Paul, to come to this IDX. And what is there anything here that you're seeing that CME is really eyeing on any of the topics that are being discussed?
There's a lot of future innovation around clearing. So there's OTC clearing is a hybrid between futures and the OTC marketplace. It offers a lot of the efficiency. So there's a lot of talk about OTC clearing and how that impacts FX. And that's another area we're looking at, particularly around options and cash settle forwards and NDF. So we have that offering, and it's interesting to talk to the market participants who may not want to make a leap into futures straight away, but the hybrid is OTC clearing. And also we're talking about our volatility quoted options, which we're in the process of launching, and we launched the volatility quoted options at the end of last year. They trade, our listed options trades on a premium quoted basis. It's an established marketplace. But by introducing volatility quoted options, we're trying to attract new participants to the futures marketplace to try and address some of the cost pressures in OTC. And by quoted on a volatility quoted basis, it offers a more stable price point. It's how they're quoted on the OTC marketplace. And also we have an innovation called triangulation, which links our premium quoted market to our volatility quoted market and allows premium quoted orders to be fed into the volatility quoted orders. And we're gradually pushing that out to the market, ending in June the 18th, we're launching a euro and Canadian dollar triangulation. So we're very excited about that. It's a big innovation at CME.
Oh, you know, that's what's great about FIA and IDX and all of the other ones that, you know, I attend in the States. It's a great way to network, talk about these products, talk about all these things happening in the industry. Paul, I can't thank you enough for speaking with me today on Futures Radio Show. Enjoy the rest of your conference.
No, thanks for your time.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.